Hey, you want that to go?
A historical takeout here to begin. Back in the 1980s, the economically troubled 1980s, if you had a political argument about the deficit, it was usually the dweebiest person at the table who would point out, yeah, but the deficit's only like 2% of GDP, so it really doesn't matter.
Nice impression.
But in the Obama administration, the number that is going to have much higher visibility is this $1.6 trillion deficit is projected to be 11% of this nation's entire economic output, and it's a very serious issue. According to David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times, author of The Inheritance, a book that's just out in paperback. Good morning, David.
Good morning, John. This is Revenge of the Dweebs morning. Huh?
Indeed. Well, but I mean, now I think the fact that this is an 11% number rather than a 2 or a 3% number suddenly puts it into circulation, and we're really talking about something serious here.
You know, we are. And let's put this in a little bit of perspective. During three different wars, we ran deficits that, as a country, that were above 11% during the Civil War, World War I, and World War II. But it was always with the expectation that the war was going to end, that spending on the war would dramatically reduce, and therefore this was a temporary thing. What's different about the 11% we're seeing now is that the two wars that we're involved in are, by comparison, relatively low-level wars. And what's causing this is not only the spending to get out of the recession, but also, over time, the entitlements. So when you look at the budget that President Obama sent to the Hill yesterday, what's interesting isn't just the 11%. It comes down in a few years. But by 2019, 2020, it goes back up. And it never sort of gets below 4 or 5%.
So you describe that these are not sustainable levels. And indeed, when the war ended, it went down, but it's not going down here. What does that mean exactly? I mean, can the world's biggest borrower stay a superpower?
Yeah, I mean, a sustainable deficit is when, over time, your productivity outpaces the degree at which you're spending. I mean, same thing for your home budget. You know, it's always nice if you may run big debt some years, but it's always nice if over time this levels out. And that's not happening in the U.S. budget. And so the question I raised in this piece is a question that Larry Summers, who is now the president's chief economic advisor, used to raise before he went into government, which is, how long can the world's biggest borrower also be the world's biggest power?
Well, if he's,
and, you know, the Chinese are betting not long.
But is Summers betting maybe for a long time, since he's presumably behind part of this budget?
Yeah, and the part of this budget that he's behind is he believes that you need to do this kind of big deficit spending in a time of high unemployment and to keep the economy chugging. So he doesn't have a huge problem with the temporary 11% of GDP. But I think everybody in the administration who I've talked to, though they won't say much about this on the record, has a very hard time with the out years of, you know, 5, 6, 7% of GDP. That's the part that's not sustainable. And that's where our political gridlock between Republicans who won't raise taxes and Democrats who won't cut entitlements is really beginning to cost us.
So you write that this budget deserves some credit for its candor. I wonder if we can do some, like, magical math here. Is there a way to, like, peel off the Afghan and Iraq wars and all of a sudden we don't have a deficit anymore, or peel off some of the entitlements?
It's a very good question. You could peel off the Afghan and Iraq wars and you still have a deficit, and
wow,
you still have a pretty big one. I mean, they're expensive, but they're not the biggest part of this deficit by a long shot.
And the Chinese are betting we can't do this for long? That sounds kind of scary, David.
Well, their long-term bet, you know, if you've been around as long as the Chinese have, you know, a 200-year-old, 250-year-old country doesn't seem all that, you know, impressive, right? And their bet is that over time, we're not going to be able to spend, the U.S. will not be able to spend, to spread American influence around the world the way we did in the 50s and the 60s when we were fighting communism. One of the things I discuss at length in The Inheritance is how they have, in fact, used the period of time when we were distracted by Iraq to begin to do exactly that kind of spending in Southeast Asia, in Africa, in Latin America, so that they tie up countries with exclusive oil deals. They're building capitals in developing countries. They're doing what we did quite well in the 50s and 60s to begin to spread their influence around the world.
Well, shrinking capital, growing influence. It's the story that David Sanger tells in the New York Times today. And, of course, his book, The Inheritance, out in paperback. Thanks so much, David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times.